Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. This is Joe Mott, staff writer for Compliance Week. In this edition, we chat with Julie Myers Wood, Chief Executive Officer of Guidepost Solutions, an investigative and compliance consulting firm. Prior to joining the private sector, she served as Head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement for the Department of Homeland Security. Looking at trade and sanctions, we asked Wood to compare the regulatory landscape from the time she was in Washington to the current environment.
I think it used to be a lot clearer in terms of how to avoid having sanctions issues as a corporation. During the Obama administration, the Treasury Department really ramped up the use of sanctions as a tactical and nuanced tools, and we saw this in particular with the new sectoral sanctions, where all of a sudden you could do business with an entity, but you had to make sure that the loan terms were not longer than certain days. And so it became a lot more complicated for companies than simply checking a name off a list. I think with the success of the sectoral sanctions, the Treasury Department and the U.S. government has continued to use sanctions in a more nuanced way, a more surgical way than they did before. That has many benefits in terms of really targeting specific bad actors in these countries or entities. However, it makes it much more difficult for companies who are trying to abide by U.S. regulations as well as sanctions regimes around the world.
Sanctions compliance isn't as easy as just screening for names and businesses in an OFAC database anymore. Countries like North Korea have numerous ways of masking transactions. Getting through to what may be hiding below the surface, Wood says, is a lot more challenging.
I think one area where the Kim regime in North Korea has really perfected its evasion practices is by conducting shipping-related transactions in such a fashion as to hide the North Korean nexus. And so OFAC recently issued an advisory to the shipping industry that warns of these evasive practices. And that advisory noted that North Korea frequently physically alters the identity of its ships in order to appear as different ships under a separate flag, falsifies documentation such as bills of lading, manipulates or deactivates shipboarding monitoring devices, and conducts undersea transfers or ship-to-ship transfers of oil between North Korean vessels and other third-party vessels. And this sort of activity has been going on for a long time, but I think OFAC is really expecting more of companies in terms of identifying evasion and spotting evasion as it goes through its sanction screening.
There are countries that may not be thought of as hotbeds of illegal activity, but that still require a focused scrutiny. Singapore, for example, is one country Wood points to as an offshore ledger. She explains.
I think Singapore has long been a transshipment point for things going to China as well as into North Korea. And I think one thing that OFAC is certainly expecting now is that firms that have significant shipping activities need to be screening their vessels and vessel owners, including the beneficial owner and the manager, and then be tracking the vessel's movement activities. And we've seen over the past few years that banks have really focused on this, and I think now OFAC is making it clear that these expectations are broader than just for banks and financial institutions.
Although there are certainly complexities in sanctions compliance, Wood says there are also very straightforward things companies can do to protect themselves. Sometimes it's as easy as a simple Google search. For one company, Chinpo, an online search revealed that their supposed address was the same as a North Korean embassy.
That's exactly right. And the government is expecting that firms do due diligence in their trading partners, and they really look into that. And I think the expectations are going greater. And in that example, you know, quick Google search identified, you know, the problem. So it's important for companies to think about their customers and how they enter into customer relationships. And then when things come up, potential red flags, how they investigate, and then how they track and document the investigations that they do.
More complex for a compliance program is the issue of beneficial ownership. Wood talked us through her advice for dealing with some of the beneficial ownership issues that companies face now and may face in the future.
Well, I think when you are entering into a relationship You know, taking the appropriate steps to ask questions about the beneficial ownerships is very important. And so sometimes you can avoid a problem by just asking the kinds of questions up front from the entities. Then I think also if you are a higher risk in a higher risk line of business or dealing in higher risk countries, as identified by TRACE or FATF or other sources, you ought to think about using sources that can help you identify beneficial ownership, such as Bureau Veritas's tool, such as some of the tools that LexisNexis or other have to dig deeper. I think this is an area that's really evolving, and as the beneficial ownership registries in England and other places kind of come up to fruition, there's going to be more and more information about the owners of entities, but right now there's really a lot of pressure on companies to do the work themselves. And so if you're in a higher risk place, and if you're doing business with entities that are not publicly traded, you know, smaller entities, you want to make sure that you take the steps to determine beneficial ownership.
There are plenty of regulatory fines to worry about, but how does reputational damage factor in?
That's exactly right. And a lot of times the monetary penalty is really the least of it. It's the reputational hit that your firm can get for being known for doing business with criminals or criminal enterprises is the kind of hit that firms don't want to take. And so thinking about, you know, how do we do it right on the front end and how do we set our systems up right to avoid problems, I think is really critical. The other thing that I would note with respect to identifying beneficial ownership is sometimes we see companies that gather a lot of data about beneficial ownership, but it's in different parts of the company. It might be in their procurement arm, or it might be in an arm of the company that does basic background checks, but they're not sorting through all that information to look for disparities or look for information that could be helpful. And I think really managing all this data that we now have available is very important, and the government is going to expect you. If you're gathering information on the procurement arm that might tell you the beneficial ownership or might alert you to a problem about a transaction, the government is going to expect that the compliance part of your company has access to that information and is mining it appropriately. And that's something that we're really seeing firms just now grapple with on how to do effectively.
A lot of new technology solutions are hitting the marketplace, and competition is fierce in that space. Wood gave some advice for companies investigating new solutions as they seek to supplement legacy sanctions-related systems.
So for sanction screening capabilities and thinking about providers, I think there are a couple really important factors to take into account. First, I think about the reputation of the company kind of in the industry overall and whether or not it's keeping up with changes. We are in an era where the sanctions list can change every day and where OFAC is expecting more from companies kind of every day. And so you need a sanction screening provider that is keeping up with things and is not going to kind of go out of business or, you know, stop being a major provider. And when you get in trouble, when there's an error, and there often is because it's difficult and you know, time pressure work, the regulators are going to think differently if you're using a provider that's kind of well-known and established on that versus one that's not. The second thing I think is really critical is think about how the sanction screening tool that you're going to use integrates with your other systems. You know, does it have a case management system that you're using to track alerts, or is it something that where you're going to have to track the management of alerts all outside of that? So integration into your system and how you'll be able to do that is very important. And I think a third critical thing is to think about the alert management and disposition process and how you can rethink and reframe that as you go on to a new technology. A lot of times when we see companies that have issues with sanctions, the issues are not that the screening software failed to identify a potential hit. The issue is that the way that the alert was dispositioned by the company employees was an error, that they had a faulty process. And so it's really important to focus on the pieces that are outside of the technology, the alert disposition, as well as the software itself. I know that there is a ton of innovation and interest in machine learning and AI in terms of alert resolution and disposition and making sanction screening quicker and more effective. I think that there's a ton of potential here. But if you are a company or a financial institution that's had some difficulties or is having trouble with your sanctions program, I would think long and hard about whether or not you want to be really on the leading edge of that or whether you want to wait and kind of be more middle of the pack, because some of this technology, there's a lot of promise there, but execution is not fully there yet. So you want to proceed with care and with testing and with management of that so that you don't have an issue.
A supply chain compliance program for assessing risks needs to focus on both suppliers and buyers. It must also investigate shipment processes. She explains.
Well, certainly with the shipment processes, a lot of that does go back to the vessels and the way that the shipment is moving and en route, and making sure that you're looking at that and focusing on that. And I think that the recent OFAC advisory that's really highlighted the importance of shipment practices and the difficulties in potential for evasion really puts a lot of pressure on companies to think through and make sure that they have effective vessel tracking processes.
Companies should not function in compliance silos. Wood gives the example that a sanctions compliance program can also apply to anti-money laundering efforts and other regulatory demands.
There are many times when a red flag that comes up for potential sanctions issue also could show an AML problem or a bribery issue or some kind of other compliance problem. And that goes back to the point about kind of the data and making sure that you're thinking holistically about the data that you have in order to identify vulnerabilities and risks across your organization and not really siloing the data as only identifying a potential sanctions issue or a potential AML issue. Often the data can identify vulnerabilities and risks across many compliance areas, and it's really important to kind of be thinking that way because, unfortunately, when there's a problem, the government's going to be thinking that way and expecting you to have a broader mindset. For that reason, I would also really emphasize the importance of just some basic cross-training. Make sure that the people that are doing basic AML reviews or sanctions alert adjudications, that they have some understanding of red flags across the business so that they can think it's not just a KYC check-the-box activity, but it's their activity could also identify a problem that you could avoid in AML or sanctions.
That's all the time we have for this edition of the Compliance Week podcast. We've been discussing sanctions compliance with Julie Myers-Wood, Chief Executive Officer of Guidepost Solutions. This is Joe Mott, Staff Writer for Compliance Week, and thank you for listening.